Hi, everybody. We are back with episode 9 of 10 of the Goose podcast miniseries. Second last episode. I feel like I'm going to need to get one of those little soundboards that can play that lamenting music, a bit of, you know, outros and stuff. Anyway, with me today, we've got some really cool stuff to talk about. I've got Andy Quinn, young man, NFL Kicker Academy, and David McIntyre, the CEO of Cubby. So, David, would you like to introduce yourself and explain what Cubby is and why you do it and essentially what it is, the basics?
So it's for people with sensory processing issues, and what it does is it makes a tailored program for them so that they can actually what they call regulate. But it regulate is a bad word. People think regulation is like an army or something like that, but really what they're doing is they're balancing their sensory needs so that they can participate. People talk about inclusion, but we talk about participation.
Sure.
And it came about when my daughter was diagnosed about 8 years ago. And we started hearing about the barriers facing her and people with autism in education. Big problems. Sensory processing difficulties expresses itself as behavioral issues like stimming, which is perfectly fine. We all do that, by the way. Or violence, it can get really bad for the person suffering it. And the natural approach from the school is to put that problem somewhere else. And it's a kind of an old adage. I kind of experienced it myself going to school. I'm dyslexic. Yeah. So I kind of understand standing on the other side of the door. But really and truly, the schools are just not equipped to manage these issues. And what we did with Cubby is we developed a piece of technology that helps the school help these children in a correct fashion and put them where they belong, which is back in the classroom. And that's why we call it participation instead of inclusion. Inclusion is in the same area, but participation is actually in the classroom doing the work.
Brilliant. And Andy, yourself, NFL Kicker Academy, like, you reached out to me a couple of weeks ago on LinkedIn, and I was just blown away by someone your age with the amount of stuff you do and why you're doing it. So if you'd like to introduce yourself and explain who you are and what you do and why, because, you know, so,
this time last year I got scouted for the NFL Academy in Loughborough University in England, and basically I'd like to see myself as a high performing athlete, but along with that I've got two brothers that are neurodivergent, and basically I've seen the effects that anxiety can have on them. And I've been sort of throughout the last year or two, I've seen Cubby around the place, and my brothers. I've seen the effects it has had on my brothers. They're basically like they use it in Crumlin Hospital before they got bloods done, and usually there'd be a big ordeal and they spent 15 minutes in it, and both them had blood taken and no real anxiety around them. So then I saw that happening, and I sort of wanted to see if that could affect me, because I'd usually get quite anxious before performing, especially kicking, which is such a binary, you either make it or you don't make it. So yeah, basically I've been using it. There's one near me in a library in Castlereagh, and I've been using it recently, and I've noticed the benefit it has on me, even if I use it just once a week. And then also David was telling me that the captain of St. Michael's College has been using it as well before his rugby games, and their coaching staff used it. And it just sort of, it really centers you. And I think it's quite a beneficial thing for elite athletes to be thinking about, and to just be getting them extra 1%. Because my brothers were using it to get about 30% back up to where they want to be, but these it just benefits you 1% at a time.
It's
incredible, isn't it?
Like, I've been looking up the website in terms of the actual product. Essentially, the most basic way I can explain it is, like, it's a box that would be available in like a school, a library, or these kind of environments. And essentially, David, you'd probably be the best. You're obviously the best person to explain this. Like,
I don't know. Sometimes I do get lost myself.
Like, so let's say, like, you know, this is what I thought was really cool, is that it's not just for people with neurodiversity or autism or kind of variances of that. So let's say I'm just going to use myself as an example. Someone who, you know, I work a lot, you know, I'm going to get stressed sometimes, and maybe something like this is going to be good for me to walk in, rest, breathe, reset. So how does this work from the moment I step outside one of your boxes to when I get out?
Oh, okay. So Andy mentioned St. Michael's there, just to clarify. I think that was a year ago, so it mightn't be the current captain of the rugby team, but it was very interesting when we heard that. So the word hacked, I'm sure, John, as an industrial designer, you've come across that word before. The product is getting hacked, not by hackers or anything like that, but by people using it differently than I had intended. We used universal design at the beginning. So I was very lucky. One of my best friends, Peter White, is a doctor in design thinking. And so he's rubbed off on me and some of his ideas. And so we wanted universal design. So we wanted something that had no stigma attached to it, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
A lot of sensory spaces are soft toys and stuff like that. And we just thought, well, how does this travel with my daughter's journey to life? You know, as she gets older, will she continue to use this as a kind of a safe space? So that was the first approach. We made it wheelchair accessible, of course. That was a no-brainer. And there was a couple of little things like that kind of just came out from good design principles. You know what I mean? We got lucky in some cases too. The space itself, we think, has a lot of impact on the person when they go in there. It seems to transform when they go in. You know, they break away from where they were to something new, and then the experience starts. So in essence, what happens is, you go up to Cubby, it remembers who you are, it changes the environment to suit your sensory needs, and after 15 minutes, you go back to what you were doing before. That's essentially what happens.
That's beautiful.
Now, if you don't have a program, you can go up to Cubby, you can create your own program, and after 15 minutes, you go back to what you were doing before. And that's the whole point of it. So it's very short, targeted, and get back to work, please.
Yeah, Like the more I was reading about this, the more it was kind of fascinating me, because like I'm a soccer coach. It is one of my many things, but one of the other coaches in the club, he has a son that has recently been diagnosed with autism, and then one of the players also has a very young son who's recently been diagnosed. And I think just even from talking to them about like challenges around schools, whether it's like, you know, the kind of specialist schools that they need to be in, or you know where their levels are at, and like we'll say, I won't give names, but I know, like we'll say, my mate with his son that's recently been diagnosed, he can go to to two extremes very quickly, but they know how to rein him back in. Whereas that's obviously going to be very hard for teachers in a school setting where there could be 20, 30, and in some place in Dublin maybe 40 students in a class, and it's really nice to see, because rather than excluding people or separating people based on things, you're able to kind of bring them together. And even for work environments, I think this is a really cool thing, because you have a section on the website that says not just for autism. And it's like, you know, in Andy's case, it's, you know, high performing athletes, you know, to have, you know, reduce anxiety and stress before games, or even like work settings where it's high paced, very stressed out environments. You know, people sometimes just need a way as a couple of minutes to reset themselves and be able to go again. It's like,
yeah, reset, refocus, we say.
Yeah.
We have teachers using it. We started hearing about teachers using it earlier on. So we've always been proactive in the workplace. I didn't expect it, but obviously you dream that a product will fit different areas. Then our first customer, actually, the first person that bought it was Temple Street Hospital. And we started hearing that the nurses were using it there, which was awful interesting.
Yeah.
And we thought it was a bit of a phenomenon. But then we started putting them into schools, and we could see that happening in the schools as well. And we put them in libraries now as well. A lot of libraries have cubbies. And to tell you the truth, it's mostly adults that are using it. So yeah. It's great to see it. And Andy will talk to you about Galway now in a minute, but the experience in Galway City, we have libraries, we have schools, we have hospitals that have cubbies, and now we have, I can't tell you the name of the company, but they're a very large company. They're about to put one into their workspace, and it's just been an incredible journey, actually. A humbling is used a lot, but yeah. I tell you, after living this for the last 7 years, it's incredible where we've got to.
Yeah, no, like you're very much, obviously, I know Simon Harris has been talking a lot in the press about, you know, innovation of cities. I think Connacht's kind of been the focus area for this. So you seem like you're very much in the right location, or is this something that's kind of almost happened in tandem, or how is this whole journey basically got to here in 7 years, and where are we going in the future?
Tough as hell, really tough. When we started this, we were laughed out of the room, literally. You're going to do what? So once you get a couple of early, I technology is a new novel technology is always hard to get into anywhere, really.
Yeah.
And what we done was, we done a great training program with the iHubs in ATU. That it really was an eye opener for me, and it changed this company completely, really.
Yeah.
Messaging and stuff like that. It's incredible resource. I would tell anybody that's looking to have an innovative idea that they should be looking at these guys. They will help a lot. That opened so many doors for us, and opened our minds as well. We had a different point of view. And one of the things we done was we started interviewing the schools, because I built the product and failed, completely failed, lost all my money.
Happens.
And completely got it all wrong. Well, not all wrong, but I got a fundamental part wrong. And we went to New Frontiers, as I said, the iHub. They trained us about messaging, but also they trained us about asking the customer what they wanted, right?
Yes.
And you think, after being in design for 20 odd years that I am, that I would have figured this out. But I was one of the mushroom houses, you know. You're in a dark place and they keep feeding you crap until, you know, and every now and again you might have a good idea.
Yeah.
However, we interviewed a couple of schools, and I actually sold two copies to them schools I was interviewing. And all of a sudden, it went from a dream to a reality, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And they were the kind of the early innovators, you know, that small section of the community that might have the money and are willing to take a chance.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
It just helps you focus. And all of a sudden, you start building on that. And that's what we did. And Galway was the first schools to buy copies. Scoldara and Galway. And ever since, we've never looked back in Galway. It's word of mouth. People are really interested in it, and people are really engaging with it. It's brilliant. Really is brilliant.
Yeah, we're going to need to get a couple of these down Limerick. Like, there's a library there down the road, and there's no facilities. Like, do you know what I mean? Maybe I'm biased because I'm Limerick-based, but I do find that this area of the country kind of gets ignored.
I think we have a few down there in schools now, actually. Oh, right. And it takes a little time because, again, it's new and people aren't sure about it. But yeah, the word of mouth is really spreading now, especially in this public spaces.
And we're going to share this far and wide, see how many more we can get into some schools by the end of the year.
I hope so. That's what it's all about, really. Andy will go in a little deeper now about Galway and the trek that they're talking about.
So there's many medals in the background. So it's obviously
the medals. They're shining. They're blinding me.
So basically, just there before Christmas, Fergus Farrell sort of set up this idea with a few other people, called the Chofas Trek. Fergus had attempted to row across the Atlantic a few years ago, and he's been through his own journey. Like, so definitely, like, he's a very motivated man. But the Chofas Trek is basically, we're going to try and climb the tallest peak in each province in 24 hours at the start of June. So that'll be climbing and going back down my mountains, and then driving to the next one and doing that within 24 hours at the start of June. And just to add to that story is that everyone involved has been sort of through their own difficulties with either kids with kids or brothers or siblings with neurodivergent, sort of that are neurodivergent, and then Fergus himself was paralyzed a few years ago, so we all have sort of a story to tell. But basically the whole idea and the whole reason for the Toughest Trek is that we're going to try and make Galway make it into an autism friendly trail. And just there's some infrastructure there, but to grow the infrastructure and then also to grow awareness of the fact that them like the cubbies are where they are, and trying to get hotels on board to make Galway basically autism friendly.
There's a couple of hotels already on board, and you need to talk to Fergus, John, if you get the chance. It's absolutely. The guy is remarkable. He was paralyzed. I told he wouldn't walk again, and of course he proved everybody wrong. I tried to row the Atlantic, which is, you know, a sane man wouldn't do that.
Honestly, I love people like this, like Joe, even like yourself, Andy. It's like you couldn't get me to go up that many hills. Like,
yeah.
Nah, I was only just before the show. I was explaining something about how bad my old hips are from my time playing rugby and soccer. Hence why I coach now. It's, you know, as they say, if you can't do, teach.
So. You done it at least at one stage, John. You know, I'm going to commit to climbing at least one of those mountains with them. If you knew how unfit I am, you would say, wow, David, you're nuts. But I did have to. I kind of said I better do something.
Yeah,
and chip in a little bit, but I think it's open to everybody, Andy, isn't it? Can anybody climb, or is it just
anyone? I think I'm not 100% sure, but I think anyone can climb. But it's just going to be, they want to make sure that it gets done. Like we don't want to go around saying that we're going to do this and then end up not doing it. So
have someone like me holding me all back.
Sorry,
have someone like me holding you all back.
At the moment, we're training Fergus is training, and a few of the other lads are training inside in June, trying to make sure that they're, because we're not doing this just to raise money. We're also doing it for the challenge and to spread the awareness, and it'll sort of disprove our point if we don't do it. So the lads are definitely determined to make sure that it gets done. And we have an awful lot of people doing behind the scenes work as well, which is brilliant.
Gonna have to get you strapped up with a GoPro and be getting this live stream up on the Instagram or something of you climbing up and down the hills. Come here. So two questions. One, when's it on? Two, where can people donate if they want to, you know, rummage
in the project? Fergus Farrell has converted his Instagram into the toughest trek on Instagram. And I believe there's a GoFundMe page there. And we are set for the 2nd of June, but that's due to change, or it could be changed.
Irish weather and all that.
Yeah, exactly. So starting at 12 o'clock on the 2nd of June, and then finishing 12 the next day, at 12 p.m. or midnight the next day. So it's from midnight to midnight on the day of the 2nd of June. So climbing around down in Munster, Leinster, Ulster, and Connacht, and finishing in Connacht then. It should be an exciting day.
Yeah. Which is the hill you're doing in Munster? I should know this.
I should too, but I'm not 100% sure.
I think it's on a t-shirt there somewhere, guys. I think
we're just gonna move swiftly on from that question.
geography was never my strong point either, hey, I must say. Yeah. It's remarkable, and we're so proud to be part of it. And we're engaging on all levels, as you can imagine, John.
Yeah.
But it's the opportunity to meet people like Andy and Fergus and these guys. It's mighty, you know.
Yeah.
So we'll embrace it. I'm going to climb one anyway, John. We might have to meet you down there in Limerick. Hey? I might pass the baton on. Hey.
Yeah. No. I'll meet you for a pint. You won't be getting up any hills.
No better man here.
I'll be going to an old hot yoga class after this just to loosen out. I played we were so short bodies there for football yesterday. You know, time of the year, weather conditions. I had to tag out for the first time in about 18 months yesterday for a little cameo appearance. And when the lads went down, and I swear to God, I'm in absolute tatters. Tatters. 15, 20 minutes, and I'm like, oh, I have new sound effects.
Oh, yeah.
So we're not far then. But your look, like, these are not the only initiatives, but like anybody who wants to get involved here, look up the toughest trek, look up the GoFundMe, look up the Instagram, you know, throw a fiver, throw a tenner, throw more if you have it, you know.
And the whole, all the money raised is going to be put into buying a cubby for an extra cubby for public use in Galway. We're not sure where we're going to put it yet, but it's just to add another one to the money that are in Galway already. Like,
Yeah, no, I think this is such a cool, it's such a cool product. And you know what? Technology for you, you know, every time people talk about technology, they think about, you know, the worst of the worst. They think Black Mirror, they think, you know, social media, my phone's listening to me. What people seem to always miss is like this whole tech for good side, where it's like here are so many technological innovations that are purely designed with goodness at their heart, and it's about helping improving life, people, skills, talents, whatever it might be. And like, it's almost like people will ignore them because everybody's looking at profitability and bottom line rather than what are the things that can help improve people. Because I even know in school, like when I went to school, I'll tell you this story. There was a guy in my class, and this was before, you know, probably shows my age a little bit, but diagnoses and stuff like that probably weren't where they are today. So he was just called a bit odd. He was a bit of a troublemaker. Fellas working in one of the biggest companies in the country now, like doing scandalous work in data analytics and stuff like that. But like, he found the thing. He found his thing, and it was just Zoom. But in school, it was just like the poor young fellow was just tossed to the wayside because he wasn't, you know, like the rest.
John, technology certainly freed me. When I started working in an office, I was a toolmaker. I was a tradesman. That's where I started. Luckily enough, but my father had a company, and I got a start. But when I started working in an office for sure, I could hardly read and write. I was that bad with my dyslexia. Yeah. And I, luckily for Outlook and spell check. Now, I'm not saying that I got it right all the time, but it certainly got me through. Yeah. I remember misspelling valve for value for one time on a drawing. And it was very funny because your man was correcting me, and I was like, well, oh, God, how did I make that mistake? But the other thing is the 3D design suites that came along. Mm. It just changed. It opened the world out for me anyway. I could all of a sudden, I didn't need mathematics or anything. I could do it by trial and error and see it in real life.
And I think the real good bit about the Cubby is that it's so easy to use for everyone. That like a lot of sort of this sort of technology, you can be sort of scared of going near it or using it because obviously there could be a stigma around using it. But once you get beyond that, the physical use of it is really, really simple. It's just select your time and select what you want to, whether you want to reduce your anxiety or like whatever you need. And then you just sit in it for 5, 10 or 15 minutes.
Yeah. If you don't mind me asking, so like you were obviously explaining about your brothers, how does that process differ between, we'll say, yourself and them?
For them, it completely changes them. And then for me, it just sort of, for them, it completely, like you can see the difference in them for 3 or 4 days after using it. I like obviously the example of them taking bloods in Crumlin, and they weren't passed by it at all, like but then also when they're at home, just like one of my brothers, he tends to sort of just talk constantly out of pure anxiety, and you just notice that he's just a lot calmer in himself and reassured. And then for myself, I just find it like my mind would start racing, as anyone's would, especially when you're concentrating on one thing in specific, like kicking. So it just helps me sort of ground myself, and it has less of an effect on me, but it definitely does still have an effect on me, and it definitely does improve my performance. I can definitely see the benefits in using it.
3 or 4 days of change is mental. I would have just assumed short window, you know, like, help you get through today, like 3-4 days, like that must have made such a difference to like even your parents, you know, when you know, because there's what, 3 of you?
Four of us.
Busy house, like, do you know what I mean? I'd be the same. Like, I have 2 brothers and a sister. It's a busy house, so I can only imagine like how something like this, it's not just, you know, it helps yourself, it's not just it helps them, it helps the teachers in the school, it helps your parents, and it's like, here's something that it's not just about the one person. It helps the whole ecosystem around to support someone to.
And the fact that it lasts over like 3 days or 4 days, the effects of it, it means that you don't have to have it in your house. You don't have to, like, you can use these ones that are in public facilities like libraries and stuff, and you can get the exact same benefits out of it for free, basically. And I think that's brilliant. And hopefully we can bring more awareness to it in Galway and in the Connacht region.
Like, what's our long-term plan here? I assume I'm obviously thinking straight off the box. It's like, you know, you have Simon Harris, who's been talking a lot in the news. You've got government's, you know, support. It's nearly, for me, it's just screaming government put this into public libraries.
I wish.
If anybody's watching out there, clicking, honest.
I'm meeting Norma actually in a couple of weeks' time, would you believe?
Brilliant.
In Manchester, of all places. But I'll tell you a quick story, John, if I can, about a school we were in Dublin last year. And it was just phenomenal feedback because we fine tune the experience to you, right, on your sensory needs. But what we also do is we fine tune it to your likes. So we say that you tell us that you like maths, for instance. We'll have a kind of a sciencey experience or space and stuff like that. And I was in the school and we do these things called celebrations because we want to celebrate that Cubby has gone in, that they made the investment, et cetera, et cetera. We meet parents, et cetera, you know. Yeah. And I met this young lady. I think she was about 12 or so with her mother. And I asked her, you know, what do you like about Cubby? And she goes, I love my experience. And I go, okay, yeah. And she goes, it's all about spaceships and space. And I want to be an astronaut when I grow up.
Amazing.
And I went, wow, we really got this one right.
Yeah.
And I just said to the mother, how is the young girl at school and after school? And she says, well, actually, she comes home now in the evenings and she does her homework, which she never did before. And I just thought to myself, imagine if I could meet her in 20 years' time and she actually became an astronaut. Wouldn't it be something? But, you know, that's what we're trying to do, release potential.
Yeah.
And that story just reckons, you know, that's what it did for that young person, which is it's powerful stuff, isn't it?
And yeah,
that's what keeps us motivated every day.
How do you not get emotional on a day-to-day basis?
Oh, I do. Oh, I do. Yeah. Oh,
that's hitting right there, like going. Fuck.
I do. I started crying. I won an award there last year, and I started crying on the stage because it was just a huge, some kind of relief or release. I don't know what it was.
Yeah.
I just got really emotional about it because as I said, when we started this, people laughed us out the door.
Yeah.
My own family, if I do meet for your pint, I'll tell you a few stories about the crack we had. it's probably long stories, but you know, my brothers were my family, or I love them to bits and they love me. But the advice they were giving me, it was to do something proper with myself and get a proper job. And
that's the Irish mammy vibe. I'll turn around.
That's right. Yeah.
I even started this crack. It was like, you're going to say something stupid. Like, don't do that. You shouldn't go live on the YouTube. On the YouTube, obviously. It's like, you're going to put your foot in your mouth and you'll never work again. I was like, don't worry about me. This is fine. It's real people talking about real stuff. And it's about, like, and this, honest to God, this is why I like to do this, Joe. It's being able to talk to people like yourselves about these kind of stories, about these kind of products, and really show that technology isn't just, I have a new Samsung, here's a new MacBook. I know, look, the other night, myself and Alex were talking about video games and, you know, VR and stuff like this, and there's spaces for everything. You know, some things are entertainment, some things are about productivity, but something like this is just so much down to how can we improve someone's life, and it's fucking class.
Like, so 15%, yeah, John, 15% of the population are neurodivergent. It's just that 90% of those don't know they're neurodivergent.
Yep. I can back that. I'm on a waiting list for the old lady. For the old lady in the shoe, and I've had a couple of therapists go, are we sure? I was like, I just got bored in school with certain things. I just didn't want to do it. I was always quiet and shy in school until I hit transition year, and then I kind of grew taller. So I had more confidence, but there was plenty of classes. Like, I remember, like, there's one story I'll never leave me. It was like the German teacher going to mother, the parent teacher to meet and going, he's a bit thick. And he's like, nah, I get A's in every other subject. I just don't want to do this. I'm doing it because I have to be here. So I'd rather sit in the back and doodle.
I got that a bit thick in every class I was in. Hey, except technical drawing.
And I actually am sort of undiagnosed dyslexic. Like every English teacher I've ever had has said to me, "You should go for a test. You should go for a test." And on the waiting list now. Like, so it is. Like, it's funny how like many people are sort of neurodivergent, but they don't know it. Yeah. So I think that's like quite. I think I'd say the number could be higher than 15%. Like,
I think this is, it's such an Irish, I feel like this is another one of these Irish sins, or maybe it's a generational thing. Cause I remember when I went to school and I was talking about that lad, he was just, you know, your classes, whatever. There was no even conversation about, you know, is there something else here? Is there a diagnosis we can give to support and help? I think it's only maybe, from my viewpoint anyway, and I'm welcome to being wrong, I feel like it's only maybe in the last 10 years or so where the attitude has changed, rather than saying you're a disruptor, or, you know, what my grandmother used to call it, bull brat syndrome.
Yes, it has changed. Maybe not in the last 10 years, but certainly the last 4 or 5. I've seen a huge difference. Like, I would have never admitted that I was dyslexic, and now people are talking about openly. And that has to be good for society as a whole. It needs to be embraced. Andy touched on stigma, and I touched on it as well, that I didn't want stigma. But that's where we started from, was the remedial reading and stuff like that was stigma, because it separates you from your peers, you see. And it's not that your peers separate. It's you, yourself, separate from your peers. Because you feel different. And then all of a sudden, because you feel different, you are different. So stigma, you know, if I was going to give anybody a kind of a heartwarming kind of, you know, get on with your life kind of speech, stigma shouldn't stop you from feeling better. Right? You know what I mean? And that's what I like about Cubby now. It's actually breaking down some of those barriers. But I still tell you this, if I was working for a big company, I might not tell them I'm dyslexic, just in case, you know. So I think we still have a long way to go. I will say this, though. There's a lot of companies looking autistic to qualify. It just goes to show you the skill sets.
Come here. They're like, as my mate has said before, he was like, these kids have superpowers. Like, it's almost, you know, sure, certain maybe social skills, certain, you know, things that you need help with, but there's something else. There's a spark somewhere else that's next level to what anybody else has.
It's a different angle. It's a different way of thinking. It's incredible.
It depends on what you're interested in. Depends on what your focus is, and then it's almost like that hyper focus of I can do this. I love this, and then you shoot off to the next level of it. Like, I remember that kid in school, and hearing what he's doing these days, you're just like,
blown away.
Did I see that coming then? No, but knowing what he was good at in school, somebody probably should have copped it.
Yeah, well, that's the technology for good again. Technology is for good, usually. Like, that job didn't exist 15, 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. They do now. So, you know, what we should be doing and talking about, and I guess what people talk about autism and neurodivergent people, it's value. You know what? Everybody has a value, and this community has an incredible value. And it's untapped. So the mission really is to, how do we untap that huge potential and that value? That's the mission we're on anyway.
Yeah, 100%. And like, is like these, you know, they're trying to get the cities, you know, connected up and, you know, friendly. And the fact that there is actually a politician, as much as I don't agree with most politicians, the fact that there's someone actually actively talking about it is great to see. I don't actually know the background of how that even came about, to be honest. But
his brother is set up, Simon Harris's brother set up As I Am, an autism awareness charity. And he's actually talking to us about the Chuffers Trek in a few weeks. So he's involved in that as well. Yeah. So that's where his sort of pushing for autism awareness is coming from. Simon Harris is coming from. So just to give a bit more background on why he's saying that.
I didn't know that. Yeah. I actually genuinely didn't know that. It'd be great now if they could find a few quid down the back of RT's couch and actually put it into something useful, wouldn't it?
I think them few quids are gone, hey. Spent already. But if you look at what Andy is doing with the toughest trek there in Fergus and the team, it's like that takes a lot of work and a lot of organization. And to put that kind of work in is, I think it's a true reflection of the community that they're trying to support and they are going to support. The trek around Galway is actually interesting. They're talking about how do we get people going to the shops? How do we get people going to the tourist areas? How do we get, you know? So it's like that freedom of movement within the community. That's what they're trying to build there. And I think they're going to succeed.
And it's also giving families, it's not just because the sort of the neurodivergent people are being looked after. It's also giving the families an opportunity to go somewhere where they can feel that in case something happens, that they're able to calm down their neurodivergent child or adult. So it is also like by setting this trail up in Galway, it's also given a sort of peace of mind to the family as well, that they can go there and without any sort of, without that extra stress and sort of have as, have a trip that they want to have, like.
We've seen that before in Castlebar Library, actually, Andy. I never told you that story. I can't mention the franchise that makes burgers, but the mother came in to use the cubby in Castlebar Library, and she had three children with her, and they had the they had a big event next door with the ambulances and the car police cars, etc., you know. So everything was a bit noisy. So she came in and said, I need to use cubby. She knew exactly what she wanted. She set up the cubby for one of the young fellas, and he was inside having his experience. And the librarian just said, you know, you must know about cubby. And she said, yes, of course I know about cubby. I needed to come in because I knew I could help him calm him before we go and get some burgers, because I had promised his siblings that we'd go and get burgers. And it would take me an hour of deep compression to get him regulated and ready to go. And it only takes 10 minutes here. And off they went afterwards and they had their burgers. And that's really what it's all about, really. You get me? Yeah. And then the siblings, if they're anything like my little girls, they weren't given out to the other one for missing the burgers at the end of the day. So it's the impact of that. And that's I guess that's what this is going to deliver, really.
Yeah. It's normalizing what should be normal. You know, everybody is a little different. Like, and some people need some help with certain things, other people need help with certain things. Like, do you know what I mean? I'm nearly 33 and I'm open enough to say, you know, I go to a counselor every week, not because of any particular reason or anything bad. It's just that, you know, I do a lot of things. So it's good sometimes to get a little bit of a touch point and go, dude, slow down this week, and you go, okay, you know, that kind of way. But 3 years ago, I couldn't say that to my mates. You know what I'm saying? I'm saying it on a live feed like this, going, who cares? You know, sometimes that's the way it needs to be, that everybody has their different things. So if we have tools and abilities to support that and make everybody's life easier, because the angle I love here is like, it's like, yes, it helps the child, yes, it helps the person, but it's the ecosystem around them. Everybody gets, you know, a benefit from this. You know, there's a parent there who's able to, you know, support the other children. There's, you know.
I think part of that story with the parent is that if she, like, she could be in Castlebar and not know that amenity is there and have, it could be there, but she's not getting the benefits of it just because she doesn't know about it.
Yeah.
So the biggest, another tangent off the toughest trek is just raising awareness and showing people where your closest cubby is or your closest amenity is, so that they can make use of it. Because there's no point having them all around the place and no one knows where they are or how to use them.
So if I was to ask you, where do I find a list of locations of where they're at now, where would I find that?
On our website, it's there. There should be a tab there, network, and it'll show you every one of them.
There we go.
I was up at the Italy game there last week, and there's even one in the Aviva Stadium, and like that's how accessible there. Like, yeah. So if
it was working, Andy, you'd be interested to know it was used 12 times during the match.
Yeah.
Oh, so brilliant. The great thing about that, John, is Aviva, when they invested it because of the message of participation, and they put it right behind the stand. And the idea was that if you could be out in the park enjoying the match like everybody else, and if you needed a break, Cubby was there behind you if you needed it. And that's exactly what they're doing.
So simple.
It's so simple, but it's so we now we collect information, you know, so we know that so we have occupational therapists. They create the experiences. We don't make it up. Like, it's not pulled from the sky. And we have, they're all cloud based, right? So we know that the occupational therapist experience are effective 89% of the time. And we get feedback from each clubby telling us whether we're winning or losing to choose that analogy mightn't be the right one, but to see if we're actually winning or losing, or if we're delivering a break that actually helps or not. And if it doesn't help, our OTs change the program automatically. And if it does work, we keep using it for putting new videos into it, though, and new music to keep it fresh and alive. And that's the power of the connectivity and the network that we're building, that they're all cloud-based. So what we really are doing is Cubby is augmenting an occupational therapist. Not the therapy now, let's be clear, but at the same time, that sensory break, it can be delivered anywhere.
Now I know. So Andy was watching one of the earlier podcasts that where there was an occupational therapist in, and this is obviously where this connection even came from.
Possibly,
I think it was after that one where you reached out to me on LinkedIn, and like, Joe, this is why I've even loved Joe doing this. It's like the extra connections that you build and being able to, like, I had a moment there last week where I was looking at like the numbers and stuff like this. Like, if you told me a year ago I'd be speaking to like people like yourselves about these stories, I'd be like, go away. And like, this is why I love gadgets. I love technology, but I love this side of it so much more because there's real fucking impact and it makes sense. And like, it takes one person from government to go, this is a good idea, put it into libraries. Because what we're doing in some libraries now is they're putting in like music studios, you know, little recording set places and stuff like that. This is more beneficial and realistic than going, let's put a podcast studio in a library, put one of these in there. Like, they will be used.
Yeah. We in Castlebar, they got 400 visitors in 1 month to Cubby.
Yeah, and Castlebar, in the nicest sense, wouldn't have the same foot traffic as O'Connell Street in Dublin or the other O'Connell Street in Limerick or Patrick Street in Cork. But like,
there is a real need. And I think what one of our failures really is that we can't get enough of these out there quick enough. We're not communicating the good news. I think we need to do more.
We're gonna try. And even like, look. Outside of this, I do a bit of American stuff. So even if we want to have a chat one of the evenings about, you know, how we can, I don't have enough time to do it, but I can tell you what you need to do.
Fair enough.
I can definitely point you in the right direction in terms of resources or people that might be worth talking to and stuff like that. Because like this,
absolutely, John, I'd appreciate it. Yeah, I would.
Great product and like the platform here to be able to build something that's so good, because I'm on the website here and I can even see locations in the UK. We haven't even talked about that yet, like that you have them in the UK too. They're in Manchester, they're in Liverpool, they're in London, they're in Birmingham, like they're there, and it's about expanding this.
We delivered 80,000 sensory breaks last year, and 89% of them worked.
That's a hit rate. Like Andy, what's your kicking stats? Because I can, are they above 89%? Like,
the coaches want them over 90, but I'm still that's a work in progress.
So if you're doing 89%, Andy, you're not doing too bad. That's for sure.
Yeah, there we go.
It's a high score, all right. It's interesting because we're kind of research and data driven, the data we don't sell it. Of course, we don't share it or nothing like that. That's clear in our GDPR, but the data helps us get better. It just does. One of the things that we learned was that actually, again, in Mayo here, the access to the Cubby was too long, and the data actually showed us that. Would you believe that? It actually showed us that the access point, we weren't tracking the person. What was happening was we seen the trend during the week, and Wednesday was the busiest day, And we asked parents why Wednesday was the busiest day, and they told us we don't want to walk through the library any other day because it's too busy. So what they did in the library is to change the access point so that you didn't have to walk through the library to get to the cubby. And it changed it.
It's such small things.
Small things.
This is amazing. Like, I've covered everything I had on my notes, but there is one other thing that I have on my notes that I need to ask about. It's for Andy. What is this Catch Pass initiative?
So basically, one of my brothers is in a youth reach program in Roscommon. It's a LCA, so Leaving Cert Applied program. It's for kids basically that have, basically they're not suited to mainstream schooling. So they go into this and they basically go into school from 9 till 3. And then just go home after that, and they get no real physical activity or sort of socialization through sport. So what I decided to do along with my dad is to bring, or initially we wanted rugby, but then we renamed it Catch Pass because it's not rugby. It's learning the very basics of just being able to catch a ball and pass it to the person beside you and learn their name. And the whole program went over 6 weeks, and we went into 4 different schools. This is the first time we did the program, and we went through 4 different schools, training them once a week, training each school once a week, and then at the end of the 6 weeks, so they went from throwing the balls at each other like weapons to being able to play a rugby game at the end of the 6 weeks in Craig's RFC, and they were able to compete against other teams and be able to work as a team. And it was sort of a social skill that no one had ever taught them before, because they didn't, because like sport is something that you sort of have to, no one is going to force you to come in and play on a club team or anything. It's your own decision, but we sort of realized the benefit that it can have to you. So, and the fact that my brother went in and we sort of noticed the losses he was getting from not playing sport. So that's it basically. And we're going to try next year to roll it out even bigger to more schools and try and expand it throughout Connacht and the rest of the country, really.
That's, again, this is so simple.
Yeah.
It all sounds so simple. Like, I don't.
I've met Niall as well, and he was telling me about it. It's great idea. It's really great idea.
Yeah. I've played team sports for years, and I remember when I first went playing men's soccer, I always found it mental that the different backgrounds of people, the different skill sets, the different everything. Like, there was one lad who was a pharmacist. There was another fella who was a bricklayer. There was another fella. Unemployed, and then you had me. I was 16 coming into men's team, little egotistical little shite bag in school, coming from school, was still fit and could run. But then you learn about, you make these connections with people from so many different backgrounds that I wouldn't have gotten.
Yeah.
So this access, essentially creating access to team sports.
But then one thing that we also did on top of that I didn't mention is, like David, we took data from... We sent out questionnaires to the school, got each child to say, would they do it again? Did they enjoy it? Questions like that. And then we had questions for the principal. And there were certain kids in certain schools, their attendance throughout from Monday to Thursday would be sort of on off, not that consistent. But over the 6 weeks, every single Friday, they turn up. I think there's 3 or 4 different examples of different kids in different schools that they were just turning up because they had this rugby on at 12 o'clock and they had this outlet. And then I think 3 or 4 kids ended up going from their youth reach that up to being sort of recommended through us to go into an actual rugby team and a rugby club. Mm. And they're now playing in a full rugby team. It's great to sort of be able to integrate them into society, basically.
Mm. And it's even mental, because I don't know if you've obviously you've heard the story of James McLean, for example. Do you know, he only got diagnosed
last year before.
That fella is like an icon of Irish soccer, and it was just access. It's just about giving access and ability to people. Now, he was none the wiser, but at the same stage, it's if you can create the access for people and the opportunities, the people will take them.
Yeah.
I met James and his wife actually at the Viva when they launched it. Awful nice fella. And yeah, the wife was very beautiful, very nice lady as well. And it's interesting, isn't it, that one of their children, I think, was just about being now diagnosed at the time.
Yeah.
And but he's now diagnosed himself as well.
I think it was one fed the other. The child got diagnosed and it was almost like flagging for him or something like that. But still,
I'm not sure. But I think yeah, it probably the child having differences probably highlighted his own. It had to.
I don't know.
One thing, as you know, John, you have kids as well. They're great at highlighting the
I don't have kids. My brother has.
But not deficits. But you know what I mean. Interesting. Yeah.
No, the kids and my brothers. I'll stay.
You have no kids, John.
No.
I thought you had three kids. I must have misread that one.
No, the brother has three. God bless them. We have the two girls and the boy. I find it great because they're three such different personalities. You've got the oldest girl, weapon, so smart, and then you've got Mason, my godson. I think he kind of got our genes, bless him, built for rugby without the structural integrity to actually play it. It's like, sure, blocky, but oh fuck, we got shoulders gone. Well, and then the youngest one, she's only 6 months old, but like it's fascinating seeing like them growing up, and you're going to see the challenges that they're going to have. And then, as I said, like all my mates have, Jesus Christ, I have mates with four kids, I have some with three kids, and they're all, you know, so different. As I said, one of them does have a son with autism that got diagnosed very, very young. Again, with the access he's getting to support, it's almost like it makes no difference him around other kids now. So it's class to see, and I love what you're doing. Like, you're two probably some of the most impressive people I've actually gotten to talk to through this, and it's because it's so simple, and the reason and why is just it's fucking nice to see.
Oh, thanks, John. Appreciate it, and thanks for Andy for setting this up. It's
great to meet
new people and talk about stuff.
Yeah. Look, I'm gonna have to probably wrap this up before I start crying. So we'll give it, Dave, if you want to explain where people can find you, if anybody wants to reach out and get more information, or if there's anybody listening who wants to recommend this to their schools, or if there's web,
sure,
last message for yourself to give out.
Sure, yeah, it's go to our website, is www.cubby.ie, and you go onto the info page there and contact us all you want. So that's probably the best way to get to us if you're interested to talk to us, or even if you just want to talk about what we're doing, that's fine too.
Andy, same little sign off for yourself.
I just like to say that go to, if you're interested in the toughest trek and growing the sort of autism awareness in Galway, go to the toughest trek on Instagram and donate there. There should be a link in the GoFundMe page in the bio of that. So that's all I have to say.
Yeah. And this is obviously live on YouTube. We'll have video, audio on Spotify and every other place where you can get your podcasts. So I'm just going to say it now. Share it far and wide, because this is a really cool story with some really good people doing some really good things. And I don't really need to say any more than that. So thanks, guys, for your time today. And everybody who's watching, reach out. So good luck, good night, goodbye, good morning, whenever you listen or watch this. And I'll see you next week for the last episode. And we are going to sign off on that.